Chapter 21. Uneasy. There is a time when the traveller is fated to find that insight has turned his gaze behind, and the steps taken yesterday will beckon again and lead to his weary journey's end. Dan Fogelberg, In the Passage. The alleyway was dark and narrow, crammed with malodorous refuse, but it was out of sight of the angry anthill of Rainier Enterprises. The doctor suppressed a yelp of pain as he and Inara staggered into a rough brick wall. Inara murmured an apology and eased him down to sit, gasping, against the wall while she checked his shoulder. "Been a long time since I got shot," he said through gritted teeth as Inara began tugging loose his cravat and unbuttoning shirt and vest. "A really long time, in fact. Didn't like it then, and it hasn't improved on further acquaintance." Inara pushed aside the sticky, sodden mass of coat, shirt, and vest for a better look at the wound. "I'm not a medic," she said in a tight voice, "but I've seen enough wounds on Serenity to tell you that this doesn't look too bad, if we could just stop the bleeding." "Lucky I'm wearing a cravat instead of a necktie, then, isn't it? Makes a handy bandage." He tugged at the knot with his good hand and pulled it loose. Inara folded the length of cloth into a thick pad and pressed it against the bullet hole. "Hold that," she ordered, then began tearing a long strip of cloth from the hem of her skirt. The doctor hissed in pain, but kept pressure on his shoulder. "Bullet's still in," he said. "It'll have to be dug out. My biology gets a bit funny about foreign objects left floating about. Humans have an advantage there. You can go around for years without bits left inside you. But Time Lords? Well, let's just say I don't fancy fever and delirium over a little bit of metal. It just isn't worth it at my age." And wasn't he feeling that age just now? Inara's face was drawn as she tied the makeshift bandage into place. "Your blood." He glanced down at the bright stains on her hands, too pale and lurid compared to the deep crimson of human blood.
"I know."
"Mal was right. You really aren't human." The doctor half-smiled.
"Got it in one," he said.
She was silent for a long moment. Then, "I'm going to kill him." The doctor blinked, confused. Then his brain caught up with what she was referring to. "Ah, tell me, do you want to kill him for running off to get captured? For having the temerity to kiss you? Or for picking the worst possible time to tell you how you felt?" Another silence. Then Inara sighed and said only,
"Yes."
"Well, I don't blame you. Can't say I don't understand where he's coming from either, especially the last bit. Got terrible timing in that respect myself. You'd think, as good as I am at talking, I'd have it down. But I really am quite rubbish at it. At least he said it," he added, a little sadly. "I always seem to leave it so late it never gets said at all."
"I am furious," Inara began, with a visible attempt at dignity, but her temper slipped away from her again, run ragged by fear and stress.
"Because he damn well did that on purpose. He knew it would shock me so much I'd do what he told me to. And that's just what I did."
The doctor was silent for a moment, allowing Inara to finish fussing with the bandage and refasten the buttons of his shirt, studying her face closely. Any minute they could be set upon by Rainier's security forces. They should get moving. And they would, but not before he'd had his say. They had time, or rather he did, in his pocket, so to speak.
"It seems to me—" "No, leave that," he interrupted himself as he started to button up his vest. He continued, "It seems to me, Inara, that whatever his reasons for saying it, he meant it nonetheless." Now it was Inara's turn to be silent. She would not meet his eyes.
"I know," she said finally, her voice soft, still angry.
"And that just makes me long to hit him all the more."
She caught the expression on his face and added, with a wry smile, "It's complicated." She got to her feet and bent to assist the doctor.
"Tell me about it,"
he muttered, gritting his teeth against the agony as he scrambled upright again.
"And from what I've seen of your relationship, that's likely the only time he would have said it. The first time, at any rate. It's rather sweet, actually."
He swallowed hastily the rest of his words as he spotted the look on her face.
"Sorry."
She put his arm around her shoulder again. He did not protest. The truth was, while he considered himself pretty good at resisting things like physical coercion, he ought to be, as often as he'd been tortured, mugged, and generally thumped over the centuries, he really didn't deal all that well with physical pain. not unless it was immediately necessary that he deal, at least. And by necessary, he meant the fate of a planet or galaxy or a friend. While it was important at this moment to remain upright, mobile, and more or less conscious, there was really no need for him to be all manly and stoic about it. That was a human trait he didn't think much of. And when they were relatively safe and he could receive medical attention, well, he fully intended to whine until someone threatened him. Right now, he needed something to distract him from the pain. They were moving too quickly for him to enter a trance and deal with the agony that way. Talk. He needed to talk. He thought about making further remarks on the nature of Mal and Inara's relationship, but quickly decided against it. Inara's fear for Mal was palpable, though she was doing a damned good job of keeping it off her face. Something else, then. But his brain was too occupied with the fact that he'd been shot again to come up with something all by its lonesome. "Start talking," he hissed. Beneath his arm, Inara gave a small twitch of surprise. "What about?" "Ask questions, anything, or I may pass out on you. And while you seem a sturdy lass, I doubt you can haul me back to the ship. Distract me. It isn't hard. I'm easily distracted."
"Oh, all right."
They paused at an intersection, where the alleys crossed a larger street. It was nearly dark, and this part of town lacked the carnival crowds. Inara peered cautiously out into the street.
"That thing back there. The alien.
The Moksha of Rosh, yes.
He called you a
Time Lord. Doesn't look like more than a few casual strollers," he added, nodding at the street. "I think it's safe to move across. There's another alley just over there that might take us in the right direction." And he prayed that his sense of direction, which he admitted to himself wasn't precisely reliable, wasn't going to lead them wrong. They moved quickly across the street, both of them striving to look like nothing more than a couple out for a quiet walk. It was getting dark enough to hide the bloodstains, but the doctor had a feeling he was doing a far better impression of smashed drunk than attentive boyfriend. They both breathed a sigh of relief as the narrow alley walls closed around them once more. The doctor, anticipating the next question, continued on. "Time Lord, and what does that mean, doctor, when you're at home?" He sighed again, this time in regret and ancient irritation. "In truth, it doesn't mean a lot these days. Once, if I was feeling charitable towards my people, which wasn't often, mind you, I might have given you a lecture about how the Time Lords were the protectors of the Web of Time, guardians of the timelines, all that rubbish. Most days, though, I'd have told you they were a lot of prissy, snobby, dusty sticks, and I, being none of those things, except occasionally snobbish, wanted nothing to do with them."
"And what about now?"
"Now it really doesn't matter. I'm the only one left, and I'm lucky if I can save a planet these days, let alone do much about protecting whole timelines." And it was so much easier to muck history up now that the Time Lords weren't around to set things straight. Funny that. He was starting to get a slight inkling as to the real reason his own people had found him so irritating. Maybe they hadn't been far wrong.
"Only a planet?"
A note of amusement colored her voice, and chased away some of the stress that had set her face so rigidly. The doctor was grateful she hadn't pressed about the whole "only one left" thing. "Earth, mostly," he said. "And not just because it's my favorite planet. I tell you, that little world attracts trouble like, well, like me, actually. It's a miracle we're both still around." He caught the expression on her face. "Oh, yes, Earth is still around, still thriving, more or less. Your histories are quite incorrect. Right about now, they're repelling yet another alien invasion and expanding further into the stars. Or at least," he added, "that's what should be going on. I'm afraid time isn't very stable these days. Ouch!
Sorry. I don't think it's much further to the ship. Another 10 minutes, maybe."
"At least nothing's chasing us. Yet." He glanced over his shoulder, expecting the pursuit to materialize. They didn't, but he wasn't going to hope that meant they wouldn't. She chose to ignore this pessimistic remark.
"You speak of time as though it were something tangible, like solid ground to walk on."
They paused again as the twisty alley brought them to yet another large street. This one was more crowded, but most of the people on it seemed to be in a great hurry to get somewhere else, and paid little mind to the two bedraggled fugitives as they staggered across toward yet another alley. Probably, thought the doctor wryly, they believed the pair of them were just a couple of drunks. Pity they weren't. He could murder a ginger beer right about now. More like a sea to swim through, he replied, when they were safely through. About as moody, too. No, that's not quite right, either. It's complex. But Time Lord isn't just a Ponzi title. It's what I am. It's a sense, like sight or touch. To me, time is far more than a simple ticking off of hours or days or centuries. I see time like you see your hand in front of your face. Hear it like an endless song in my head, taste it like an autumn rain. I can touch time, move through it in any direction, and time touches me in return. But it doesn't affect me like it does humans or other races. In a way, I suppose you could say I am time. He thought about this a moment as they negotiated their way through an ungainly heap of refuse. Which sounds a bit twee, I know, but as I said, it's complicated. Inara was silent again, taking in what he'd said. He liked that. She thought about things before she spoke, and, thank God, she didn't pester. Which was more than he could say about most of the humans of his acquaintance. He wondered what that said about him. It was a lengthy silence this time. His mind had plenty of time to get back to dwelling on the bullet hole in his shoulder. Sometimes, for all its vast capacity and discipline, his mind could be pathetically human. Came from spending far too much time with the lovable little apes, he supposed. Stop that, he ordered it. It's not like you haven't been injured before, and worse. It had just been a bloody long time, is all. He was profoundly grateful when Inara broke the silence again, though the question was one he didn't much like. Doctor, will that creature, will he try to control Mal's mind, like the others? He'd expected the question since Mal had left them, steeled himself to answer it as best he could. It didn't make the answering any easier, though, and Inara was far too shrewd to buy one of his flippant reassurances. Besides, she deserved as honest an answer as he could give. In all honesty? Almost certainly. Will he succeed? I really don't know. That depends on Mal's strength of will, I suppose. Inara smiled faintly. Mal is one of the most stubborn men in the universe. Then I imagine he'll be just fine. That was a lie, but he managed to slip it in under the cover of her temporary relief. The technology Viraj was using was bad enough, but it was backed by a fully trained Moksha empath. The doctor himself, with centuries of mental discipline and plenty of practice repelling hostile entities trying to invade his head, might be able to hold the Moksha off for a time, but a human like Mal, with only a human's natural psychic defense, which wasn't much by comparison, stood about as much of a chance as a snowball in hell. Mal's strength of will might keep Viraj from shattering his mind and taking control outright. But the doctor didn't like to think about the damage the Moksha could do, tearing his way into the man's psyche. Oh, Viraj, how did it come to this? He remembered Viraj as a dedicated healer and teacher, a caring and deeply moral being, someone who valued life and peace, fighting only when there was no other way. The doctor had admired him. Viraj's steady optimism and hope had kept him going, kept him alive during the siege of Arcadia. And in the horrific aftermath of its fall and the millions dead, he had grieved the deeper for the Moksha's supposed death. Of all possible fates for a former Cabrand in arms, this was one he'd never imagined. How many times had he seen this happen, to old friends, to once great beings? Too often. The face of a childhood friend floated across his mind's eye, schoolmate and oath brother, madcap and full of mischief. That same face, different with regeneration, but with the same soul behind the eyes. Eyes mad now. Or had they always been mad? With the driving lust for power and glory, and above all else, survival. I'm so sorry. He hoped his ancient friend and old enemy had found peace in the death he'd fled for so long. But what about Viraj? He was nothing like the other. Had the war driven him mad, or the aftermath? Viraj's bitter words tore at his heart. We all know how well that ended, don't we, Doctor? 10,000 ships burning. Did Viraj blame him? He knew he blamed himself, but... Oh, God, is it me? Am I the reason for it? The Master, Viraj, and how many others? Had he driven them to it somehow? Stop being an idiot, Doctor. Rose's voice. Or was it Sarah Jane's? No, Ramona's voice, with the same exasperated irritation he'd heard so often during the years they'd traveled together. I have too many damn voices in my head. Thank God, breathed Inara, cutting the twisted knot of the doctor's thoughts. He looked up. Ahead of them, the alley opened into a spaceport, and, more importantly, the bit of the port that held the familiar silvery bulk of Serenity. Come on, she said, readjusting his arm over her shoulders and quickening their pace. The doctor gritted his teeth as agony surged fresh and hot. Just a little further, he thought. Just a little further, and... Inara came to a dead halt. Ne yung ma de suik yung, said the doctor. Oh, damn, said Inara. Stepping out from where a tower of crates had concealed them from the fugitive's line of vision, between them and Serenity, was a squad of 8 heavily armed men. A reader's note here, because the idea of the doctor cursing in Chinese just completely tickles me. What he said was motherless goat of all motherless goats.